Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Breakfast with the Gators, part of the Stadium and Go Network, and presented by our partner, Norris & Norris PA. Norris & Norris PA is out of Lake City, Florida, and they are a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. And you give guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate wills, or trust and estate planning. Happy Saturday night, everybody. Spring game, the John Summerall era officially kicked off. Moving day at Augusta, and a lot of fun things on the spring Saturday. How's everyone feeling?
Feeling good.
Not bad. Not bad. Came home with a sunburn after a really nice day in the swamp. It's always good to be down there.
I would say you got to see a Gators win, but supposedly it ended in a tie.
Yeah, the Gators don't beat the Gators. Summerall said that earlier this spring.
It was good though. I mean, it was not a manufactured tie. I think we had to miss a field goal at the end. The defense got a stop there with in the 2 minute drill, and so it was an all fair and square tie. I actually, that naturally flows into the format, which is so much different than what we experienced under the Billy Napier era or the Dan Mullen era, or even Will Muschamp or Meyer Ronzuk, whoever. I actually loved this format because it seemed like I saw the first team defense get a fourth down stop and then have to stay out on the field and just flip the sides and continue playing. And so I thought they got a lot of reps. It seemed much more efficient than most spring games. And so I'm a fan of this new format that Summerall has kind of schemed up himself.
What was the format for those that weren't there and listening that, no streaming for the spring game?
So the offense had traditional scoring, 6 points for a touchdown, extra point, one field goal, three. The defense, when they got a three and out stop, that was worth 4 points. When they stopped them on fourth down, that would be 3 points. And if they got, I think if it was a turnover, it was 6 points. And there was something that was worth 1 point, but it was sort of
stop. There was just a punt was 1 point.
Yeah, yeah, just a regular punt was 1 point. And so there were ways for the defense to keep it competitive and do that. But it was nice because you got to see a lot of one on ones, one on twos, two on twos, two on ones, that sort of thing. But it just seemed like we kind of had the ones getting a lot of reps, whereas usually in a spring game, if you're playing orange versus blue and you've split the teams up, then, you get the ones on, they don't play until the fourth series of the game. And this was like the ones were playing for the first three series with both quarterbacks and all the wide receivers, all the offensive linemen and everything. And so you got a really good picture of how the team looked in, I would say, probably the first, the first half, which, there were some things to be happy about, some things to be concerned about, which we'll get into. But so all in all, I was pleased with the format. I thought that it was a much better format than you've typically seen in spring games.
Yeah. Summerall said that it would be real American football. And I think that he delivered on that promise. There was a play probably midway through the second quarter where Jaden Robinson really popped Vernell Brown a little harder than you would want a guy like Vernell Brown to get popped in the second quarter of a spring game. It was good quality football. That was the biggest overarching thing. There's only so much you can take away in a spring game because good offense means something bad happened on defense and good defense means something bad might have happened on offense. So it's hard to really make those broad general, conclusions about either unit just in the spring game. But I was really, really impressed with the quality of football. There wasn't a ton of procedural stuff that I saw. I think there was, you get one or two false starts, you get an offsides here or there. I think we had one late hit, one pass interference that comes to mind in the end zone. But all in all, I thought it was really, really clean for the first spring game of the Summerall era. You're 3 months in, 4 months into a new coaching staff, and I thought that they put a product that was enjoyable to watch on the field. We can get into the specifics with players and everything else, but just overarching, I thought that they played hard. It was a quality football, quality brand of football to watch just as a fan. So it made for a nice couple hours in the swamp.
I think you're absolutely right about the point that they were playing tackle American football. Like, I remember specifically there was a play where Cormani went and lit somebody up. Seemed like Duke Clark and Evan Pryor were running over people. And it wasn't for the fact that, you know, they were running over scared DBs. Like, the DBs were sticking their nose in there, kind of like we haven't really seen always under some previous regimes. And so it seemed to be like a pretty physical game. Like, you know, it was almost kind of like an NFL game, obviously way more high scoring because of the nature of the format. But, you know, in an NFL game, you see both sides are pretty talented and, you know, one-off plays, defensive tackle will make a great play. Like, I remember there was a play where Jamario Hines just absolutely blew up. I think it was Jaden Baugh in the backfield there in an early drive. And it wasn't really anything where they would make you say, like, oh, wow, that was a terrible offensive play. It was just like, wow, that was a really nice play by Jamari Lyons and that sort of thing. And so seemed pretty fair and balanced. I think the offensive line early got worked a little more than I would have liked to have seen. And so, you know, then once the second team guys came in, it seemed like the offensive line settled in and it allowed the quarterbacks to really pick their spots. But Summerall touched on all of that in his postgame press conference. He specifically called out the offensive line and said, you know, we're basically going to be as good as they allow us to be. But it was nice to see like some actual live, like real hitting guys going after each other. 99 Emmanuel Adebayaju, how do you say his last name? He was getting a little chippy with like Bryce Lovett and some other offensive linemen, which, you know, you only want to see a little bit of that because obviously they're still teammates. But it is nice to see that, like, even in a spring game, there was like some competitive fire that, you know, going on. And one of my biggest takeaways was I saw that there was a defensive penalty, and it was a procedural penalty where a guy lined up offsides. So it resulted in a 1st and 5 for the offense on a 2-minute drill where, you know, you'd think that Summerall would be talking about to the offense about scoring. He just spent like a full minute just chewing out the defensive line. And that was a welcome sight because I don't think we've seen, you know, people get chewed out since the Muschamp era. And so maybe that time that Jim McElwain just went ballistic on Kelvin Taylor.
I was going to say Kelvin Taylor might tell you different.
Yeah, but it was nice that there was clearly some coaching going on the field. And so, you know, he called it kind of a Chamber of Commerce weather type day and Chamber of Commerce weekend. And I think that's a pretty accurate depiction. Did the Gators have a lot to improve on? Absolutely. Did we look much more competent than we had, you know, in Billy Napier's last game? Definitely. So all in all, great day.
Well, I forget the exact percentage of newcomers on this team, whether it's transfer portal or the 16 freshmen that we had early in the role. Dev, who'd you see as a newcomer that kind of stood out to you on the offensive or defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, I think that the number one name that you look out there and you say, that dude's an SEC football player he's gonna do stuff this fall is Eric Singleton, the transfer wide receiver from Auburn. Just the speed jumps out on tape. It jumped out on tape, but it really jumped out in person. Seeing that he had a long go route. I'm a Jaguars fan. It reminded me of the Zay Jones touchdown in the Chargers playoff game a couple of years ago for that real niche reference. But just a go route across the field, really good throw by Tremell Jones on that play. And you could just see that they wanted to get Singleton the ball in different ways, whether it was just straight go routes or if it was over the middle, couple bubble screens. But he was the guy that you could definitely tell is going to be too good of a playmaker not to get the ball in his hands. And just to that point, there's Micah Mays, I think is his first name.
Yep.
The transfer receiver from Wake Forest was the other one. He had a big day. He had two long touchdowns late in the first half. And a beautiful double move, another long touchdown for Tremell Jones. That the wide receiver room's nasty because you have Dallas Wilson that didn't even play. You have these two transfer receivers that came in. That's not even mentioning Bailey Stockton, who flashed a few times. He was the punt returner and had a couple of short possession type catches, you know, short third and short. You could tell Philo was comfortable with him from their time together at Georgia Tech. He hit him on a couple of third downs. So the wide receiver room, I think, and we haven't even mentioned the number one in the room, Vernell Brown, who they got him the ball in a bunch of different ways too. Had a long touchdown from Philo himself. There was a lot to like about the receiving room. I really like the running backs too. I don't know still coming out of the spring and coming out of the spring game who they view as the second running back. I thought that Duke Clark, as Will mentioned, had a little bit of physicality and then had a couple of runs where he had some good footwork. Evan Pryor looked really good. The transfer from the ECU.
That Cincinnati.
And Montgomery is from ECU.
Is that what I'm thinking of? Yeah. Montgomery, I didn't see as much of that comes to mind. But Pryor, I thought he flashed at times. So I think the running back room, obviously, Jaden Baugh didn't get a ton of work in the spring. You don't want him to get a ton of work in the spring.
Yeah.
He took one hit
there on like the second drive. And I was like, all right, that's kind of enough.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that there's, and this is kind of more overarching than just the transfer newcomer types, but the weapons are real. So I think that there's a reason some Rawls calling out the offensive line, because you could see it just in the way that the offense ran. There was more tempo than what you saw last year at any point in the last 4 years.
How many orbit motions, Dev?
None that I recall. Do you recall any, Will?
The only orbiting that is going on is the Artemis that just went around the moon and came back to Earth.
So I really like the scheme. I would say that the offense started out slow. It looked like that they were trying to work on some stuff. A lot of quick passes, a lot of pre-snap motions, bubble screens, things like that. Not very many orbit screens, but a lot of the quick game. And then in the second quarter, I think it looked like it was by design. They opened it up a little bit more in the second quarter, and you started seeing the vertical explosiveness. And it was like a switch flipped. It looked like a different offense from the first quarter to the second quarter. There was I want to say Philo had the 30-ish yard touchdown pass to Vernell Brown. The next play, you had the 75-yard touchdown from Tremel Jones to Mays. And then the next drive, there's like a minute left in the first half. And Philo, I thought it was the best drive of the game right before halftime, leads the offense. It was a 65-yard touchdown drive. The touchdown over the middle, I saw the clip was going around on Twitter. The touchdown pass over the middle to Mays, that was with 4 seconds left on the clock before halftime. So that was a really nice drive. I will say I'm not going to make any sweeping controversial declarations about the quarterback battle. I know that that's not something that we do around here on this podcast.
Luckily, we wait until all the facts and information come out before we tweet things, right?
Exactly. I think that a lot of people are declaring the quarterback battle over based off of spring game stats. And I think when you were there and watching the game, it kind of told a little bit of a different story. I know people look at the two interceptions by Philo. I thought that the first one was a really good play by another newcomer, DJ Coleman. It was an RPO that he read really well. Who knows how many times he's seen that play in practice, but he made a really good play on the ball. And then the second one was a ball from my vantage point. It looked like Vernell Brown should have caught that, got deflected up over the middle and intercepted by another newcomer.
The kid from the transfer.
I think his name's DJ too, isn't it? Anyway,
DJ Coleman is from Kentucky, I think.
I thought this DJ Cam Dooley is from
Kentucky.
DJ Coleman's from Baylor, I think.
Yeah, the Baylor kid got the first interception. He's number 33. And then it was the Kentucky kid, Cam Dooley, on the second interception. Yeah. I thought that second interception was more Vernell Brown. Like, it was a little bit behind him, but it was a ball that he would say he should have caught. So I would caution the listeners to take the spring game stats with a grain of salt. I thought Tremel Jones looked really good on the two touchdown throws. He did take a bad sack early in the first half. I thought that there was a little bit more crispness to the offense early when Philo was running it, but it's hard to ignore the big plays. I mean, 40-yard touchdown, 75-yard touchdown. Tremel Jones, threw a really pretty ball in those two plays. So it's an interesting battle. I think both guys have their strengths and both guys have their weaknesses.
It sounds like Summerall's going to talk to the entire team next week individually and let the quarterbacks know where they stand. If they had a game this upcoming Saturday, who would be starting, who would take those number one reps throughout practice and game week, and just give them the information leading into summer and the offseason program. So
absolutely, and I think that going into the summer, it's too close to call.
We start out with FAU and Campbell, so you know we don't want to bring back shades of the Muschamp era or the beginning of the McElwain era where you know they're running out both quarterbacks because they didn't want to name a starter. Summerall doesn't strike me as that kind of guy. It feels like he's going to be make a decision and go with it. But, Tremel took a terrible self-sack at the beginning of the game that looked like Eli Manning when he was on his dying breath there in the NFL, where he would just drop back, and if anybody was within 5 yards of him, he was just going down. And it was just ridiculous because it was like, the defensive lineman can't touch you, and he was tripping over his own feet, nervous and whatever. But then he lit it up after I sent my tweet that Philo had clearly won the job. So congrats to Tremel for making it a battle again, Not breakfast with the Gators usually isn't early on things, and so we should stop trying to be early on things, I guess. But I thought that they both played pretty well. It is kind of funny, Devin. Jackson asks like who was the newcomer that stands out, and you gotta kind of try to like struggle to remember their names because there are so many different newcomers, and it's just kind of the era that we're in with college football and even college basketball now at this point too. But so you're trying to figure out, like, I'm sitting there looking at the roster card the whole time, like, okay, who is this guy? Who is that guy? Like, it used to be that it was like, okay, number 93 came in as a freshman, but now he's switched to like number 13 because he's the stud edge and he gets like, to pick his number. Now you're like, wait a minute, who is this guy? Where did he come from? Am I confusing him with the other transfer or anything? But it was nice that, our two transfers that they brought in that are supposed to be the impact transfers made impacts on the game and had two picks, and so you kind of compare it to what we had, like, how many big time picks did Jordan Castell have in his entire career at Florida? One against the Arkansas team where Billy dressed for his funeral and we lost anyways. That's about it. So I kind of echo your sentiment that it looked like a competent operation out there. I think the quarterback battle is wide open. I think what is Sonny going to go in there and tell him on Monday? They both played pretty good. Like, Philo clearly puts it into some spots he shouldn't, but also Tremel kind of did too. Like, Tremel had a couple throws. I remember specifically one where he threw it, and from my angle, I was like, kind of held my breath, and then the linebacker just like missed it, and so it turned into like a 7 yard gain. And so I'm sure the coaching staff is looking at that and being like, you probably shouldn't have thrown that. He took a couple sacks that would be negative plays that in a real game might kill you. And so I don't think that either quarterback won or lost it, despite the fact what I tweeted after the first two drives. But it was encouraging because I think the main sticking point for me was that we have two quarterbacks that if one of them went down, like, I am not worried that the season is going to tank at all. And I think both of them are probably like, think about to get into the playoffs as an SEC team. You probably got to be like, what, like a top 10 team in the country. And I don't think that either of them are inhibiting us from being a top 10 team in the country. I think it will all have to do with, I think the weapons, like you said, the weapons are great. Like, we got Jaden Baugh. It's the
guys protecting them that
are running. Yes. We got Jaden exactly. Baugh. You know what you got with him. The backup running backs, like Duke Clark, looks fast and physical. Pryor looked good. Didn't really, Pryor clearly stood out more than Montgomery did. So I would give him the upper hand in the.
What did you think about Duke Clark?
I thought he looked good. I mean, like, he got the bulk of the carries, it seemed like, after Jaden had his first two drives. And, what do you want to see from your backup running back? Like, I don't want him running out of bounds. I want him running over people and setting the tone. And it seemed like that's what he was doing. He's fast. Absolutely. He's twitchy. He was cutting up field and, he ran over some DBs. And so I'm like, great. That's exactly what you want. And we didn't have any – we had one fumble that was like a kind of a snapping issue with Philo when he was back there. It wasn't his fault or anything. But, it wasn't wasn't anything from like a ball carrying standpoint that seemed like the running backs were putting anything, you know, putting anything up for grabs. And so I think the quarterbacks are competent. Like, are they going to make these like unbelievable throws where you're like, oh my goodness, this is the next Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, like top five overall pick? Absolutely not. But they could absolutely be good enough that we could make the playoffs because of the talent around them. And it just has to do with, will the offensive line protect them long enough? And against the first team defensive line, they were getting absolutely cooked. Once the, you know, the twos kind of came in, then it felt like they were able to open up. But I think you saw that in Buster's play calling a little bit too. Like those first two drives, it seemed like we're running all sorts of swing passes kind of things to the, you know, fake handoff, little dump offs to the tight ends, sort of things like that. Seems like we got guys out there that are faster than Hayden Hansen and stuff, and catch the ball better than Tony Livingston. And so I think the tight end room has upgraded a little bit. Hard to really tell if they have upgraded substantially, but part of that is because we actually ran four wide and we were like utilizing the strengths of the team.
That was my next question, Will. Did we see a lot of four receiver sets out on Saturday?
There were, you know, you're kind of going through the game and you're not really paying that close of attention during the spring game, but it was noticeable that we were spreading things out. The ball was going from one side of the 50 to the other. It was going back and forth. The defense is clearly having to defend all 52 yards of the grass, which is encouraging because it seemed like, you know, under Billy, everything was like so predictable, especially when you got like third, fourth and short, that sort of thing. And I thought that the very, very first drive, and obviously everybody is paying attention, we get stuffed on fourth down. And I thought that that was probably Faulkner's worst moment, where we kind of lined Jaden Baugh up in like a fullback position and handed it. Yeah, and he just got stuffed. And it was kind of like, you know, you see Jaden Baugh line up there, and maybe, you know, as fans, we're able to see better from up top than the players are there. But it was like, okay, they're lining Jaden Baugh up at fullback. Obviously, he's going to get the ball. And then they hand it right off to him. And, you know, if the offensive line blocks it right, it probably works anyways, but they get stuffed. But after that, it was like he was opening it up and doing things. I thought, Devin, you mentioned the 75-yard bomb from Tramiel. That was great because we were running a 2-minute drill, and Summerall had said right before then, he was like, I don't want there to be any – both teams had 3 timeouts. I don't know when the defense would have called timeout, but there were 44 seconds left on the clock. They were in a 2-minute drill scenario, so he told the refs, tell them to take off the timeouts. And the very first play, it was a double move. Like, it wasn't like we were just throwing bombs, running four verts, you know, just for the hell of it.
Yeah.
It was like we had one guy running a double move and the other guys were running real routes. And this was a legitimate 2-minute drill, but the quarterback saw that the wide receiver cooked this guy on the double move and just nailed it. And then it was awesome because then we just turned around and we tried to run a 2-minute drill the other way. And I was like, man, this is
executed. And it was
like the first 10 minutes were terrible, and it was not fun. And I was like, man, and that was like, it was almost like getting the last stench of the Billy Napier era for those like guys getting it off of them. Like, they were just playing Billy ball out there. And I was like, what the heck is going on? And then something happened. Like, I don't know if Summerall yelled at them or what, but like a switch flipped and all of a sudden they just started playing crisp. The ball was going back and forth. Both teams were competing. They were spread it out on offense. Defense was hitting, making tackles. They were making interceptions. Like, it was a legit, fun, competitive game. And so,
you know, it's interesting the two different skill sets that both quarterbacks have, because Philo missed, what would you say, 2 or 3 deep shots where he had open guys in the first half before he kind of got his feet underneath them. So, and Tramiel hit every deep ball. Obviously, we've all seen the highlights. And it makes me wonder, if the offensive line is the weak link of the unit, what does the staff value more? The ability to hit on those shots when you have them, or the guy that can move the ball and consistently get first downs? Because early in the game, when they were struggling to block the offensive line, Tramiel went 3 and out his first 2 drives. Philo started the game and he drove them down to the 20, 25 yard line. And that was when Jaden Ball got stuffed on the fourth and short. And I think when people read the, well, Philo ran the offense better, quote unquote, than Tramiel did, I think that's what they mean. He's getting first downs more consistently, but you weren't seeing the 75 yard shot. It was more quick, get the ball out of his hands and get him to the playmakers. Whereas when Tramiel got in, obviously we all saw the deep shots and the highlight worthy plays. Will he have time to make those throws behind the offensive line this fall? That's something to find out. But it's going to be interesting, an interesting part that's beyond the control of Philo and Tramiel, of whether the staff values the consistency and the I don't want to say make the right play, because Philo obviously put the ball in danger a couple times himself. But he seemed to understand the short and intermediate game a little bit better. But scoring touchdowns is fun. Having the explosiveness is big too. So it's just going to be interesting to see how that plays itself out over the summer and into the fall.
And at the same time, it was like once Tramiel hit that deep ball to Singleton there, like that was what opened the floodgates. And all of a sudden, Philo started throwing it all around the place too. Yeah. Like maybe he was nervous and or something. And we just like, you know, we obviously don't see what they see in practice. And so all the practice reports leading up to now, we're just talking about how, you know, quarterback's looking decent, Philo probably a little ahead of Tramiel, and obviously he has a head start just coming from Buster Faulkner's offense and everything, which, by the way, you know, for anybody who was concerned that Buster Faulkner was going to run, like, you know, the Georgia Tech, Haynes King, you know, bulldoze people offense, that it's clearly not. I don't think we saw a single, not even close to what.
I had the stats. They had the stat. I didn't keep up with, you know, I saw that the quarterback's numbers are going around Twitter, but the stadium had the overall stats. 546 passing yards to 123 rushing yards was the number that they had there at the end. Obviously, Jaden Ball didn't play that much in the game, but just to give you an idea of what the breakdown was from the offense, it was pass heavy.
Yeah, I think, you know, coming in the end of the fall, knowing that we're going to have probably some limitations on the offensive line, I think you're going to see a lot of what Dan Mullen was calling in his first year, where we had limitations on the offensive line, and it was a lot of swing, quick game stuff, kind of quick passes to our guys. You know, back then it was like the Freddie Swains of the world and that sort of thing. So now we got, you know, Eric Singleton and stuff like that to try to game plan around some of these things. But I just thought like once it was like both quarterbacks were really struggling for the first 10 minutes, but Philo was struggling less than Tramiel was. Like,
he was Tramiel's still first, moving the ball while he was struggling.
And Tramiel's first two drives were like, oh my goodness, this was like, what is this, Aiden Werner, you know, out there running the show? Like, this is not what we even saw last year from Tramiel. And then all of a sudden they just like finally get one open there with Eric Singleton getting on the throwback play, and floodgates were open. Like, you know, then you get the layered pass from Philo that was just absolutely beautiful. You get some other deep shots and stuff like that. And so maybe it was just like them kind of getting comfortable and being in the swamp and that sort of thing. Who knows? But I've never seen a spring game like that where the team went from just looking like, oh my gosh, this looks exactly like how it did, you know, 8 months ago, to what just happened? The switch flipped, and all of a sudden this is a brand new team, new era, new regime.
I'm really excited about the thought of having Singleton, Dallas Wilson, and Vernell Brown on the field at the same time with Jaden Ball at running back. That's a legitimate best.
That's like four pros playing there.
Yeah.
Like, does the offensive line hold up enough to get them the ball?
Right. And those four guys on the field means that you have guys that have flashed now, that we've seen flashing Gator uniforms on the bench, in Micah Mays and Bailey Stockton and
TJ Abrams had a nice ball that was posted on Twitter. I got to see.
Yeah, like it's
how refreshing is it? We don't have to rely on him on third and four, fourth and three for a quick catch. I know we had some injuries last year and he got put in that situation, but sounds
I am not faulting anybody for the previous regime. You know, I remember, I know the exact play you're talking about. It was either The LSU and Miami games were the exact same game. And so, except we threw five picks in one and none in the other, except he only threw for like 60 yards in the other. But when he, the failure for a player to get past the line of scrimmage on fourth and three or fourth and four is either because the player should not be playing because he's not smart enough to go 5 yards, or because the coach has not coached him to, you know, have that kind of intelligence that like, hey, you know, time and situation, you know, I know we're running this sticks route play, but like, you know, there's a difference between fourth and three, fourth and two, and fourth and four, and you've got to run your route to where it gets the first down on fourth down. So I put that entirely on the coaching staff. And I think like guys like TJ Abrams that are clearly very talented, quick players with good hands. Like, I think they're going to do so much better under this coaching staff that just, it's so clear they know what they're doing on offense compared to the last staff, that it was just like, you know, after even on the first couple drives, like I wasn't complaining about the play calling or anything like that. It was more just like jokes about like, ah, the quarterbacks don't look that good. Like Tremel had a bad self sack. Like the offensive line sucks, but it wasn't really the play calling. Like
the scheme looks smart. Like I feel the scheme is going to, if we're deficient on the offensive line come the fall, which I think Summerall's kind of letting us down soft, letting us down easy, knowing that
it's
this is going
it's to certain, be certainly possible. Yeah. Yeah.
I have confidence after what I watched today that Faulkner is going to be able to scheme around that to an extent. Obviously, you can't cover that up and hide it up for 12 games. You know,
this won't be
having a bad offensive line.
Yeah.
But the scheme is good. And there was a lot of examples in that game where it was third and three, third and four, fourth and four, where the receiver was smart enough to get past the sticks and the quarterbacks were capable enough to hit them. We made a comment on one of the touchdowns. We went for two on offense and they ran just the same thing that everybody's been running in all levels of football for the last 25 years. But it was just one of those simple little pick plays, out routes to the corner. Quarterback hits him. It's a wide open receiver, and it's just football's pretty easy when you make it easy. And that was the thing I think about the scheme. You're not watching everything with Billy's offense. I know schematically, I think some of the guys that are smarter than us about the X's and O's were like the scheme itself is solid. There's not it's the play calling and the predictability of the offense that was the issue under the last staff. But I think with this staff, you can see it looks like a modern college offense. And I think that we have a coach that is going to be unpredictable, that's going to put them in positions to be successful. And the spring game, as much as you can take from it 3 months in, 4 months in to the new staff, I really thought that I'm encouraged coming out of it that the offense is going to look more like what a Florida offense, what a modern college football offense should look like.
What about special teams, Dev? That's something, or Will, that's something Summerall starts practice with each and every day first. Any standouts there, any differences you got to see special teams-wise, or do they have a special segment for that? What occurred? Well,
the first punt got downed on the one.
Yeah.
That was nice.
First punt downed on the one. That was nice. We didn't run any punt team or anything like that. And so it was just like, you know, the long snapper and the guy out there. So you can make your jokes about how we still don't have 11 guys on the field, whatever. But the, you know, Trace Mack was such a luxury. This new kicker, I don't even know his name. I know he's from Tulane, but that's the transfer portal era. He was fine. But like, it is so clear the difference between how the ball came off Trace Mack's foot when it was like going for a 65-yard field goal versus this guy where it's like, you know, I think he hit a 47-yarder and it maybe had like 52, 53. But, you know, it's kind of like what Steve Spurrier said. Like, if we're kicking 60-yard field goals here at the University of Florida, we ain't gonna be lasting very long. So we're here to score touchdowns. We're not here to kick field goals. Anything 50 and in, I think we're going to be confident that this guy is going to make it. You know, if we've got a 63 yarder to try to win the game, I am not confident that we are going to come up there. But if we got a 63 yarder to win a game, and we're probably, and we're a team, like if we should have won the game, then it's probably because of other plays that have gone on in the game. But I reserve the right to blame the kicker later if he misses that whenever we pod after that game.
I think we were 2 for 4 overall from field goals, but they were rotating kickers too. Like we have a left-footed kicker this year.
But I think that was late in like the game where I think those were guys down. I think it's going to be the Tulane. I think Summerall, you know, we joked like, oh, please don't bring over all your Tulane players. But he brings over the Tulane specialist, the kicker and the punter. And I think the kicker was pretty good for him. He just it's so clear. He does not have like an NFL boomer type leg. Like who was before Trace Mack? We had Eddie Pinero. Like he obviously had it. Trace Mack has it.
We had McPherson.
Yeah, McPherson. But he could be a like he's almost exactly like the quarterbacks. Like, is he going to lose you games? Probably not. Are you going to be able to make a 65 yarder at the end of the half, like as just like extra 3 points for no reason? And like this guy should already be playing in the NFL? No.
Wasn't he a Grossman final? A Groza finalist?
Yeah. Like he was deadly accurate. Like he made everything. You know, made all his extra points. Like I think if we get him in position where he's 50 and in, like he's probably gonna nail it. But
he was 21 of 22 from inside 50, 4 or 6 from 50 plus with a long 52.
Yeah, and that's about what it looked like. Like the 47 yarder that he kicked looked like it only had about 5 more yards before it would have hit the crossbar. So, you know, we got to definitely, you know, 30 yard line is probably his where I'm like, okay, like we actually have a chance for this to go in. If it's, you know, out to the 35, I'm going to be a little worried, which, you know, obviously the SEC is going to be tight games, but hopefully with the way Summerall's recruiting, we're going to about to dominate people and not have to worry about all that.
Anything else to hit on spring game wise? I did see some of the Gator men's basketball team, Boogie Flan, the Brown brothers.
CJ, couple guys that haven't resigned yet were there.
Chenya Lu was there. Yeah. Some guys that
Cornelius Ingram.
Him and Rue haven't announced if they're coming back yet or not.
But they seem to be, I mean, they were at the spring game, so, you know, that's got to be a good sign, right?
Was the newly added Gator Denzel Aberdeen in attendance? Looked like he was in Gainesville, according to a few Instagram stories.
I think he must have been at a preview for grad students.
The Norris brothers were having a lunch with him. I don't think he made it to the spring game.
We were checking his ID at the door, making sure that he could get in.
He got rid of that Kentucky student one card.
Yeah, Gator one still work. He had to reactivate it.
Yeah, let's just jump into that. Obviously, some guys have announced their return. None bigger than former Florida guard, you know, 2025 starting shooting guard, point guard at Kentucky, Denzel Aberdeen. Returns to Gainesville, pending his eligibility, he's going to be appealing due to the 41 minutes he played as a freshman. Will, yeah, I know you said we don't tweet early, but you certainly had some thoughts with his announcement, I think, Friday.
Yeah, it's very conflicted. You know, I really liked Denzel until he did that horrible thing to us. And it was like, it was just, there was so much more to it. Like him being one of his, like he was committed to Mike White, and everybody who had anything to do with Florida basketball was telling Todd, you got to drop this kid and just like restart and do everything. And Todd said, no, like this kid wants to be a Gator from Orlando. Like I'm going to do it. And he built him from the ground up, guaranteed him a starting role in February before we won the national championship when he was a contributor. And the way he was dishonest with the staff and then left and went into the portal, really because Texas Tech was recruiting him, but he ultimately ended up at Kentucky. But it was all for money, and just the way that he did that just really I think it rubbed a lot of Florida fans the wrong way, especially me. But like Florida fans have a much different perspective than the actual players on the team. Which is a major problem because we don't play for the team. And so it's tough when, like, you know, you being your traditionalist self is like, how in the world can we possibly support this guy who literally left us in the most disgusting way possible for green dollar signs after we won the national championship and are like gunning for a second, and he just like ups and leaves and goes to our biggest rival.
But Will,
everybody else,
when you can add a national champion and 25's best returning guard in the SEC, you have to do it.
Listen,
they don't make these kind of players in the portal.
Those guys don't just fall off trees.
We have all said some things that we regret, that then a year passes and we're like, you know, I know I said that I regretted that. However, I did maybe turn out to be just slightly correct about. And so, you know,
from a basketball perspective, though,
It's like,
this is really good.
As a fan, I'm very conflicted. Like, you know, I hate what Denzel did to us. I'm absolutely going to get over it after the first game when he, like, you know, like when the guy goes out, like, say there's a runoff dunk and like Tommy, maybe this helps with Tommy Houck coming back, and somebody passes him the ball and he runs out and dunks it and starts pumping up the crowd and gator chomping. Like, obviously, I'm going to be like, man, that was awesome. Like, holy crap, we're going to win the national championship for the second time in 3 years and like had a one seed in between. Like, wow, I can't believe Todd has us rolling like this. Like, what a story, blah, blah, blah. But right here and now, I'm still conflicted. But as far as basketball,
I got good news though, Will. We've never lost a game when he hits a three.
That's great. That's great. Like I said, still conflicted. Need to see that three go in.
Jackson.
But from a basketball standpoint, I do worry a little bit that him and Boogie may not complement each other. You know, like we kind of gave Xavier a lot of crap and him and Boogie and like said they didn't really compliment, but they really were kind of good compliments. They both just needed to like hit a couple more shots each game to like really flash that. And then you would have been like, oh, like this is great. Like, we got a stud defensive guard who can like knock down some shots. And we got the silky smooth guy who goes through the lane and makes some layups and like can also hit a step back. But like Denzel, like he doesn't strike you as a shooter, but his numbers are way better than you would typically believe. Him and Boogie kind of have a propensity to like dribble the ball just a little bit too much. But I'm hoping that, you know, like you're still conflicted, but you go watch some highlights from that 2025 season and you're like, damn, like Denzel actually was great. And him coming around and hitting some mid-range jump shots, like we could have used all of that. And so, I don't know. I mean, it's total trust Todd mode. Like the guy has gotten us the back-to-back one seeds for the first time in school history when the SEC has been the toughest it has ever been. And so if he thinks that Denzel and Boogie are the best guys to lead us to, like, you know, obviously he is devastated over the fact that we just got upset despite being one seeds and even the fact that we lost the SEC tournament. He wants to win all that. So if he thinks that it's the Denzel and Boogie show is the way to get us there, then who is little old Will Norris to disagree with that?
Little Willie. The way that I'm operating is based off of the most reliable analysis that we get. It's preseason odds to win the national championship next year. And the last I checked, the Florida Gators are the favorites over Duke, over Michigan State, UConn, you name it. Florida's the favorites. And based on that, I'm operating as if the rest of the big three is coming back too. If Florida has each of those guys come back, you're returning six national champions to the 2027 Gator basketball team.
From a team that won it in 2025. It's not like we're defending it and these guys have come to run it back. They've stayed together for 3 years.
Think about, right? Like, I know that the situation was that we were supposed to have Denzel and Xavier together, but now knowing how much better throughout the season Boogie really was than Xavier, if you could go back to the end of, you know, we just won the national championship, and then we're going to get one portal guard, and the option is Xavier or Boogie to pair with Denzel. Which one do you want? And I'm probably taking Boogie. So
teams are going to score like 53 points a game against us next year.
Yeah.
Like Boogie Denzel, just think about, I don't know if this is a lineup that you run, if it's obviously game plan specific and this roster is going to be deep enough that you can play your matchups and play with your minutes depending on what kind of game you need to play to beat whoever the team is that's across from us. The starting lineup, if we do return all these guys, is probably Boogie, Denzel, Hauk, Condon, Chinyelu. That starting five is such a nasty defense. Like, an all-time nasty defense.
That is 28 years of college experience between those five. If I'm – no. I'm close, but, yeah, about 23 years.
They also have
22 years of experience.
You know, that year at Kentucky probably served Denzel a lot of good too, because he was the primary like ball handler, primary scorer, and that was not obviously what he was, you know, that year at Florida. So if you're looking at him and Boogie is like both guys that can handle the ball, can shoot, like you kind of get back to that mold that we had. Like obviously nobody's the same exact shooter as Walter Clayton, but like in my mind, like the perfect guard tandem are, this is going to, you know, really hurt some Gator basketball fans, but it's like a Shabazz Napier type shooter guard. And then a Ryan Boatwright is like really what you need, is like that two guard Elijah Martin, like bulldog defender type guy that can knock down some big shots, but just like their best player is not scoring on him. And to me, like Boogie is good at that, but he, and even as good as he is defensively, like other guys were able to get into the paint in him because he is a little frailer and he's not quite as long as Denzel. And so I just think it's going to, like what Devin was saying, it's going to make us so good defensively, like the amount of length we have and everything. And just the fact that he becomes our best shooter. It just scares me a little offensively in the half court. I don't want to see, him or Denzel really jacking up some shots at the end of half, but I think Todd's going to figure it out.
Well, you need last month of the season Boogie shooting or Arkansas Boogie shooting. Like you don't need him to be 40% from three, but if he's 33-34%, I think Denzel's a 36% career three-point shooter. Herb is a 39% career three-point shooter. I think Zay Brown even is like 33, 34, 35% himself.
Yeah.
And then obviously it's just a luxury if Hauk comes back too on top of all of that. The lineups will be what's interesting. You're still kind of projecting a step forward this offseason from Lloyd. So the shooting, I think, will work itself out. But what I'm excited about is the defense. And I think that defense and championship experience next year, if it works out the way that it might be trending to work out right now, it's a preseason top three. I would be hard pressed to not make them the preseason number one team in the country, just knowing how much championship experience is returning to the team.
Even if you have just two of the three come back, I still think we should be a preseason number one, top two team in the country.
Yeah.
It also, I mean, the other thing about Denzel is, you know, it is kind of just the nature of college basketball right now. So I'm glad that Todd is coaching the team and not me, because, you know, Denzel would knock me on my door and be like, get the hell out of here. Yeah, I'm sure you are. But is there another guard in the portal that you would take over? You know, we were kind of talking about, like, you know,
PJ Haggerty is available, Will.
Yeah, I always said he sucked. So, yeah. Was it Deedon
Thomas? Isn't he back in the portal too?
He just committed to Houston today. So, but he doesn't. He has never defended the way that Todd has wanted people to defend. So it's like, is there? You've named two guys. One as a total joke. So one guy seriously that you would like want to pair with Boogie to try to win a national championship next year. So, is there a better option than Denzel? I say
Todd would find him.
There's 1,800 guys or 2,000 guys in the portal, so maybe, but.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of there's just a lot of unknowns, you know, like Todd hasn't even been taking these guys from, you know, low majors. Like, I think, was Will Richard literally the lowest major guy he took? And he went to Belmont. I guess maybe FAU, like Conference USA versus MVC, I guess the Missouri Valley is probably a little lower, definitely a little lower than Conference USA, but they're both kind of mid-majors. They're both
lower than Ivy League.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, maybe Xavier is like the lowest, but, you know, so who else are we supposed Micah to get?
Micah went to Marshall.
He got Sam Alexis from UT Chattanooga.
SoCon, I mean, they almost had multiple, they were almost a multi-bid league that year. But anyway, the point is that it's just, you know, who else are you supposed to take? And like I said, from the very beginning, we're not the ones making the decisions and we're not the ones who get to set the guidelines on who gets accepted back and who doesn't. And when you see all the guys on Instagram talking about, like, you know, hell yeah, the boy is back, like all that stuff, like obviously they're stoked for it. And, you know, maybe this is the first step in really getting the band back together. And, if Denzel, like, literally is the first guy and we're cutting down the nets in April 2027, like, I won't even remember that he played for Kentucky. They lost to us three times. Who cares? This is like me going through the five stages of grief again. I'm already starting to, like, you know, this is good and therapeutic for the podcast here.
Deb, does it scare you that maybe we are kind of resembling the 2022 through 2024 Braves, just trying to keep the band together, bring them back at a certain point in 2023 when the offense was so explosive and you thought probably was the best team out of that run and couldn't win at all?
Yeah, the thoughts crossed my mind, but I trust Todd Golden a whole lot more than I ever would have trusted Brian Snicker. So.
Well, this is – I mean, it's similar to the Bolts. You know, the Bolts had a really nice run there from 2020 to 2024, and they constantly got the band back together until they finally had to let Stamkos go. And John Cooper, some Bolts fans would not trust John Cooper, but he does seem to be a pretty good coach, although he clearly can't win the big one when it comes to the Olympics. You know, it's very natural for champions to say, hey, let's get the band back together and run it back one more time. And so, you know, I mean, do we think Denzel might hit a couple more big shots this past season? You know, I mean, we did lose to Iowa, so you can always say, yeah, probably would have.
I think that Denzel Aberdeen is better for Florida basketball than Eddie Rosario is for Braves baseball. I'll put it that way.
Oh, no, that guy was pretty
old. That's a really niche little audience that gets the those two.
So official statement as a podcast, we are going to allow Todd to bring Denzel in. Confirmed.
That works for me.
Yeah. Okay. Just wanted to make sure we were all on the same page before Todd did something that he regrets. And you guys don't have any worries about, like, culture? I know there was some stuff going around on Twitter about, like, the culture and stuff like that.
I think the culture's a lot bigger than Denzel Aberdeen.
That's good.
I think a weaker culture could screw it up, but I think the culture, I think that, A, the team doesn't operate the way that fans do. I think that these guys bled together already, and they never had bad blood between them as bad as Florida fans had bad blood with Kentucky's guard. But no, I don't think that I think the culture at Florida basketball right now is a lot bigger. And maybe something that Denzel comes in and gets and builds on himself. Like it makes
good.
A team.
I mean, that's good. I just saw some people talking about that on Twitter. So I was a little concerned. And
guys that know more about the locker room than Todd does.
Yeah, you know, I mean, people hear things and they see things and they say things, and sometimes, you know, they say the wrong things. But
especially for guys that aren't there on the Tuesday, Wednesday night games in the O-Dome.
Yeah, I mean,
one flashing out.
You know, it's like the old saying: "See something, say something." And so, who would these people be?
You're just a guy that this hypothetical.
Whoa!
There's just guys raising concerns.
It is. It's just people who are raising concerns, and they're valid concerns.
Yeah.
You know, and so who would we be to not address those valid concerns and to just make sure that, you know, the coach is thinking about them?
Hey, that's what this podcast is for. The tough coaching, asking the questions that nobody else has the nerve to ask.
Right. And in doing so in a way that maintains our journalistic integrity
and, you know, is very thought provoking and is slow to judgment and that gathers in all the facts and all of that.
Thank you for your service, Will.
Like I said,
there is one key piece not returning with the boys getting the band back together. Michael Hand locked in into the portal pending a six-year. I think it's a six-year college, maybe fifth. Obviously trying to get a red shirt back after burning it to help the Gators win the 2025 title. And I doubt we win it without his return due to Sam Alexis and some others just being banged up. What are your quick thoughts on Mike at a parting?
I'm good with it. I think it's Mikic's turn anyways. And so good with me.
Wish him the best unless he winds up at an SEC rival.
But yeah. if he were to come back for a seventh year though, from the FCC rival, what would you say?
I wonder if Denzel coming back makes him want to come back.
That is interesting. I didn't think about that.
I didn't think about
get
that.
The old band back together.
I mean,
do I get a baseball minute before we wrap up?
I was just about to say, big weekend in Athens currently. I know we had a big final game three against Florida State on Tuesday night in Tallahassee. So, Dev, I'll give you the floor for your Dev's baseball minute.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's been a couple weeks. I've been reading up and watching up. I'm really excited about getting another sweep of Florida State. If there's anything about Gator baseball, it's they're going to sweep Florida State. They're going to sweep Miami. The first two games of this series against Georgia was just a Kevin O'Sullivan masterclass, switching Aiden King and Liam Peterson on Friday and Saturday nights. Both guys go seven innings, really, really good outings. Obviously today being Saturday, they weren't able to close it out. Bats didn't show up. Get a big win on Friday night. Tomorrow is a huge game. Getting a series win in Athens, improving to 9-1 against ranked opponents would be huge. It kind of keeps you in the SEC race if you win this series. You kind of fall out of touch if you lose the series. Georgia's obviously leading the SEC in baseball so far this year. So giant, giant, giant rubber game tomorrow in Athens. Big game for the Gators. I think that was 1 minute and 4 seconds if I started at the time. I think so. So not bad for a guy that's had a couple weeks off.
Just to add to the baseball minute, I know unrelated to the Gators, but the Braves are currently first in the NL East, something we did not sit atop the standings at all last year.
That's a great point, Jackson.
That's my extra innings comment to your baseball minute, Dev.
Back to your baseball minute about the actual team we cover. with all the journalistic integrity that I was talking about.
No, we haven't covered in 3 weeks. Yeah.
Excuse me. Back to what I was asking. Why is the team so inconsistent against terrible teams, but so good against ranked teams?
So to me, it's the same thing that's been the last couple of years. If this team throws strikes and doesn't give away free bases, whether it's walks or hit by pitches, they're as good as anybody in the country. The problem that they get into, and I think why Sully switched Liam Peterson and Aiden King on Friday and Saturday, is Peterson wasn't throwing strikes. And when you don't throw strikes, when you don't eat up innings, not only does it hurt you on Friday, but it hurts you on Saturday, it hurts you on Sunday because you've gone to the bullpen in the second inning on a Friday night. And it was time to make that move, but I understand why it was a tough move to have to make. And I think that obviously the injuries are one thing that keep kind of piling up the last couple of years. But when this team throws strikes, everything else kind of follows. They got to stop giving away free bases. I think when they play to their potential, it's because they're throwing strikes and not giving away free bases. I mean, you look at Friday night, it was a 1-0 game for most of the game. Florida ends up winning 8-1. They scored seven, I think, in the top of the eighth or top of the seventh. But it's all about throwing strikes. And then as far as the bats go, that your guess is as good as mine. I know that you see
sometimes good pitching. Sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe
not good. Yeah. That's the hitting is super inconsistent. Obviously we haven't had Lawson for the last week with his mystery illness. A couple other guys have missed some time out of the lineup. A couple guys have slumped. I do think that they're talented hitters. I like the lineup generally. They just have these stretches, these games where it's just inconsistent. Frustrating to watch sometimes, but I do think that this is a team that has a high ceiling. They're obviously top 10 in the RPI. I would be surprised if they didn't get out. Can't say that because they struggle so badly against teams that aren't good. I expect this team is talented enough and plays well enough to make a run in the postseason. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I think that I wish that they could play FSU every single midweek game because it seems like they focus a lot more just in the midweek when they're locked in, like the, and you know, getting swept. It's one thing to like lose a game to like High Point or Alabama, but to get swept, even lose a series, is pretty bad. But then, you know, they go on the road. I know Arkansas has been struggling a little bit after we beat them, but to do things like that, to, you know, win game one at Georgia where Aiden King's like carrying a no-hitter into the seventh inning and that sort of thing. Like this team is clearly, this team is really, really good. They just kind of got to lock in, you know, get the walks out of here. The stupid defensive errors, the base running errors are going to drive me insane.
Most egregious loss, people want to talk about the Bama series and the High Point series. The loss on it was Saturday because it was Easter weekend. The game three loss against Ole Miss was the worst loss, in my opinion, of the season because they were winning that entire game. I want to say it was 3-0. Don't quote me on the score. I'll issue an apology if I'm wrong. I want to say it was 3-0, and they gave up like 6 runs in the ninth inning. Just the pitching just fell apart. Couldn't throw strikes. Kept hitting batters. And didn't even make them earn it. That one was the one that sticks out as the worst loss, the worst series loss of the season so far to me, at least. I think
even with all the injuries, like we got talent, we got bodies, we got guys. It's just like, are they gonna throw strikes?
And come postseason time, when you're in a regional and you have an ace like Aiden King is really establishing himself to be. Opening up a regional with that guy and not getting a Liam Peterson, you know, respect to him. He threw 7 today. He looked really good in the role as the number 2 guy on Saturday night. But having a guy like Aiden King that you can trust is going to go out there and give you 5, 6, 7 innings of 1-2 run ball. That helps so much in the postseason just because it helps the bullpen one. And winning against a 4 seed in your own regional – It winning against whoever in your regional on that in the first game, it puts you at such an advantage going forward from there. Yeah. Obviously, like
they're going to be the most talented team in their regional, whether they're the 1 or the 2.
Yeah,
and I mean you can see it with like guy like Rittenour coming in against FSU and just like slamming the door shut. Like that was sweet. He's throwing 99 gas like right on the corner, hitting the plaque, and just. Noel's got the freaking band out there and everything. And
well, if you get Barberry back and then Lawson gets healthy, I think that you have.
If McNeely like returns to what he has been in his career, you know, he's not Brandon Neely, but he's decent.
Yeah, the bullpen's deep. I mean, they got arms this year. The X factor is always going to be throwing strikes to me.
Yeah.
Hits are going to be hard to come by both ways in the postseason. So
that's why I think it's like a focus thing. Like they seem to like lock in every single at bat better when it's like a big SEC series like Arkansas. Like they kind of took it off against Ole Miss, but like against Arkansas, against Georgia, or against the Florida State games where we like really want to lock in and win. They like, you know, they take when they need to take. They don't try to. You know, risk it stretching from second to third whenever it's not really there. And they just make the smart play and that sort of thing. And, you know, it's Florida baseball. So, like, we're going to have a situation where we got, like, runners on first and second with no outs and we try to bunt and we're going to, like, pop it up and get a double play or something. But The talent is absolutely there to get back to Omaha. Yeah.
But when you're in a regional and you're hosting a regional and playing Bethune-Cookman, how focused are they? That's where it's, you know, it's baseball. You can, if you don't throw strikes, you're not going to beat the team on the other side, no matter who they are. So it's interesting. They're good enough to keep your attention into June. So that's all you can really ask for.
And you should. I mean, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's fun winning. We should do it more often in more sports.
We're trying. Gymnastics heading to the national championship. Shout out to the gymnastics team. They always have the crowd out there going crazy on at the O-Domes on Friday night.
What is that, eight teams that go to the national championship in softball? Gymnastics?
Yeah. I saw softball just threw a no-hitter, too, on Friday night. Shout out them.
That was a shout out. Second.
When we hit on spring ball, I can't believe we didn't mention our first five-star offensive line commit for the first time in 12 years, Max Hiller, joining the program. Yeah.
I mean, it's great, but it's kind of like a sign of the times. Like, awesome. Sweet commit. I am so glad he's committed.
I want 10 more.
Talk to me in December.
Yeah. Well, it helps that, you know, Phil Troutline's been his
– Of course. Yeah, he's got the relationship. 4 years. He is. But, like, at the end of the day, like, you know, he is a great commit individually. We also have to stack the talent and keep going with all the other guys. But, you know, if we could get a couple more other five stars, and if Texas comes calling and they pay it way above market for them, then they might not be here. And so it's no fault of Summerall or Troutwine or any of the work that they're doing. It's more of just I'm tired of the way that recruiting is. I wish it would go back to the way it was, where like when a guy like that committed, you're like, oh my gosh, this program is about to be back to where it belongs. And now it's just like, oh, okay, that's cool. It's still Thursday night, whatever. Let's just like get to the weekend. And that's my take on recruiting for now.
Love it, Will. Anything else to touch on before we get out of here? We got Masters Sunday. Moving day electric in Augusta with
the Rays beat the Yankees the other night. I know Jacob Lovelace would want us to talk about that.
Shout out to the Rays.
And just kidding. Nobody cares about Major League Baseball right now. Get that out of here.
Hey, if you're not with us in April, don't be with us come October, Will.
I won't be. That's fine.
Well, the Rays.
I'll be focused on Summerall and Florida football. Don't you worry.
All right. Well, we appreciate everyone listening again. I don't know when we'll be back. Any guesses, fellas? When?
Well, I mean, if we get some of the news we're expecting here in a few weeks,
possibly a pod, depending on
the guesses.
I thought you put in a crystal ball the other day.
Yeah, you know, let's gather all the information first before we talk about it on the show. And
we've never been that kind of podcast.
But we'll start that today. Appreciate everyone listening. Make sure you're following on Twitter at BreakfastWTG. Like, subscribe on Spotify, YouTube, and Apple at Breakfast with the Gators. And we'll catch you again. Go Gators.
Go Gators. Go Gators.